Nothing
Tuesday,
is
namely Secret of the Ladder, along with the Dark Night of Contemplation, of which we are treating. The third, named
This is the Consolations of Writing, words to bridge the gap between faith and life. Welcome, this is Matthew Puller here, talking to you from a very wet and wintry Melbourne in Australia. Thanks for joining me. It's great to have you here for what I hope will be the first of many discussions about faith and writing and the way the two hold together. If you've been following me at my blog, The Consolations of Writing, found at mpuller.com, you might know that I've been concerned for a lot of years with this question. How is it that writing, the process of writing, has enabled men of faith, women of faith, and generally people searching for the answers? How is it that writing has taken some people through some of the hardest times in their lives? Enabled them to make sense of their struggles and perhaps to produce something beautiful in the process. For me, it began when I started off my blog under a different name, and I was searching through my back catalogue of pieces that I'd written to start off the process of posting some things there. And reading a number of reflections I'd written, devotional writings, I found myself looking at pieces that I remembered writing under really tough circumstances. I remembered writing them when I had very specific struggles in my faith or struggles in my life and struggles to understand what my faith looked like at those times in my life. But when I read what I'd written, I saw the way that those struggles and putting pen to paper or putting my hand to the keyboard enabled me not just to make sense of the struggle for myself, but to produce something out of it that perhaps could benefit others. Well, perhaps you yourself have experienced this. It might have been that piece of writing that someone else did, someone who was able to give words to describe a struggle you had that you'd never really understood until you read it articulated there. It might be an experience like the many that read C.S. Lewis's A Grief Observed, a book he originally published under another name, persuaded by friends to share it in case it might be of use to others. Ironically, some of his own friends, not knowing who the author was, shared it with Lewis, saying you might benefit from this. And many people have benefited from it. I remember a time when I wasn't struggling with quite the same grief as Lewis, but I was struggling with a sense of abandonment from God. And reading Lewis's words, I thought, yes, you can express it just the right way. And then to see his writing process taking him through that journey of grief, that journey of from abandonment to a feeling of restoration, of hope restored. That helped me, that he was able to pave the way for me to have a greater understanding of what I was experiencing at the time. Or maybe you've had an experience like that. If you have, perhaps you'd like to share it with me. Send us a comment at mpuller.com, the Consolations of Writing blog. Or it might have been an experience you had of journaling, of putting pen to paper to unravel, untangle the mess that you were going through in your life, in your thoughts. Perhaps it was something that, as you tried to talk about it, tried to think about it, it was all just a congealed mess. But maybe then, as you sat down and wrote about it, you were able to make sense of it. Or it might be that you were able to do what some of the great writers of the past have done, which is to turn your struggle into something that helps not only you, but helps others. Well, we're going to be looking at a lot of my favourite stories, and I'd love to hear some of your stories as well, perhaps your own experiences or people whose stories have helped you. In the coming weeks, we'll be hearing a number of different ones, but today I thought I'd start off with just a small story for you. It's a story of someone who's had a significant influence on me, and I know on a lot of people over the years. The German theologian, pastor, scholar, and poet, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. You may not have known that he was also a poet. Bonhoeffer, I think, is most famous probably for two aspects of his life and career. He's famous for his books of theology, books like The Cost of Discipleship, Life Together, Ethics. Famous even for some of the collections of his writings that he did while in prison. And he's also famous for going to prison and ultimately dying in prison as a result of his participation in a plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler. It's this last part of his life that's made him a bit of a controversial figure, but also quite a pin-up boy, shall we say, for Christians who want to think about how to engage meaningfully with the political world around them. People who perhaps don't agree wholly with Bonhoeffer's decisions, but who understand the process he went through and who admire his determination for the church not to sit by passively while evils were done, but to take a stand against those evils. Well, this is, I think, what we know of Bonhoeffer. But I made a discovery a number of years ago which surprised me about Bonhoeffer's work. See, I was interested when doing some research for this program to find that in 1941 Bonhoeffer was actually banned by the German government from writing or publishing. Of course, some of his most influential writings came after this time. How was that? Well, it was because he wrote extensively from prison to his friends. He wrote to his fiancée, who he was sadly never able to marry. He wrote to his good friend Eberhard Bethge. And he wrote a lot of reflections. He wrote sermons. And he wrote poems. And he wrote fiction. Of course, his fiction isn't what he's famous for, and it's perhaps easy to see why. Not because it's bad, it's quite compelling, I find, but because he was never able to finish the fiction pieces that he wrote. He began a drama, a play, and he also began a novel which he said in a letter to a friend had quite a bit of autobiography in it. He also said that the novel was getting a bit stuck in one of his letters. But in the same letter to his good friend Bethge, he said that he was going to send some poems instead. He said, "I'd prefer to show you a long one about this place, that's Tegel Prison. I don't think it's too bad. Perhaps one day it will get out." Well, the poem did get out, and it's published in his book Letters and Papers from Prison, a collection of the sermons, the notes, the devotions, the letters he wrote. His letters are quite extraordinary. They include reflections on his day-to-day life. They also include some quite in-depth theological discussions. His fiction is published in a book called Fiction from Tegel Prison. It's published alongside the complete works of Bonhoeffer. You can actually get it as an ebook at the Kindle store. And it's a fascinating read. You may see a gift that Bonhoeffer has there for description, for building up characters. And it's fascinating to consider why the great theologian chose, at a time when he describes having writer's block, novels getting stuck, he at one point in a letter is going to give Bible references for a particular topic of discussion but says it's too hot. This is a man that's struggling in his thinking, but he was able to express himself, strangely, in fiction and in poetry. Well, fiction enables, I think, us to look at issues we're facing from a different angle. Sometimes we're able to confront an issue when it's told to us in a story in a way that we couldn't if we had to look at it directly. Or perhaps we're able to make sense of our own lives by telling stories about it. I think we see this often in the Bible. The prophet Nathan confronted David with his sin with Bathsheba, not first of all by confronting David directly, but by telling him a story about a man and his lamb. The prophet Isaiah confronts Israel with their unfaithfulness to God by telling a love song for a vineyard. Not to mention all the parables that Jesus tells, which I think would have knocked the Pharisees sideways, not by directly confronting them, but by telling them a little story with a point to it, a sting in the tail. But we also see in Bonhoeffer's poetry an ability to sometimes confront the issues head on, but in a way that can turn raw grief into something quite beautiful, something quite transcendent. The longer poem that he sends later to his friend, Night Voices in Tegel, begins with a very commonplace description of his situation. He says, "Stretched out on my cot, I stare at the grey wall. Outside, a summer evening that does not know me goes singing into the countryside. Slowly and softly the tides of the day ebb on the eternal shore. Sleep a little, strengthen body and soul, head and hand, for people, houses, spirits and hearts are aflame. Till your day breaks, after blood-red night, stand fast." The poem goes on to describe insomnia and everything that goes on during the distresses of the night. "Night and silence," he writes, "I listen. Only the steps and cries of the guards, the distant, hidden laughter of two lovers. Do you hear nothing else, lazy sleeper? I hear my own soul tremble and heave." Well, the poem moves through Bonhoeffer's distress, his inability to sleep, the inability of others to sleep, and the trouble of his thoughts. There's a rawness to the way that the poem is organized. Sometimes Bonhoeffer uses neat rhyme and rhythm. Here, the poem seems almost all over the place. The poem moves between short lines and long lines, a little agitatedly, much like the toss and the turn of sleepless men that he describes. Sleepless men who long for freedom and deeds of wrath. There's a yearning for freedom, a yearning for punishment of those who have suffered so much. And then there's ordinariness. Bonhoeffer describes hearing the happy lisp of half-grown boys delighting in childhood dreams. "I hear them tug at their blankets and hide from hideous nightmares." The poem moves from place to place, from person to person. It moves from the outside of what he sees among the sufferers to the inside of what they're feeling. For a raw expression of grief, there's something amazingly well organized. The poem shifts tone. It moves from lengthy stanzas to really short, abrupt statements, to prayers, to dreams, to hopes. He listens to voices speaking to him in the night that speak to him of his desperation, speak to him of hope, of the hopes of him and of other men. And it concludes, returning where it begins, "But the night has passed. Stretched out on my cot, I stare at the great wall, outside a summer morning which is not yet mine, grows brightly into the countryside. Brother, till after the long night, our day breaks, we stand fast." In his poem, Bonhoeffer pours out his own grief, yes, but he also pours out the griefs that he shares with everyone there. And as night passes, he says, day isn't yet his. Day isn't quite there, but day is coming. Well, Bonhoeffer is known for being a deep systematic thinker. Bonhoeffer's work is tightly structured, often quite dense in its organization. Here, in his poetry, he has the same embracing of community, of taking in the struggles of many under the one roof. But there's an ability to pour out something raw, something not yet organized, and present it at a point of hoping that one day soon it will be organized. Hoping that one day soon the despair that he's feeling will turn to something better. Hoping for the day that's not yet his. But there's a promise in that, isn't there? It will be his soon. Well, it's an amazing poem, and I do recommend you read it in full. It's lengthy, as he said to Eberhard, but it's also a very rewarding read. You can find it in various copies of his books. Letters and Papers from Prison is the one that includes that poem and also all of his letters and sermons that he wrote in prison. But perhaps his most famous poem is also my favourite, and that's the one that I want to leave you with today. It's a poem called Who Am I? Well, let me tell you a bit of a story before we hear this poem. When I began my career as a teacher, I found myself wrestling with my identity in a way that I hadn't before. I'd gone into teaching pretty confident of the amazing things I was going to achieve. I watched To Sir With Love pretty early in my career, and I thought it'd probably be a bit like that, you know, a struggle at first, but eventually I'd have people singing me songs and dedicating whole parties to me, and eventually it'd be made into a movie. Well, it wasn't really like that, and I found that so much of what I was hoping to achieve, I'd connected with who I was. I thought that I was my achievements, and so then when I didn't achieve them, who was I? Well, at that time, I had a close friend who said to me, perhaps I should ask God, perhaps I should say to God, who am I? Well, I went home, and I remembered that another friend had just recently lent me a book of Bonhoeffer's poems. I'd hoped to read them. I thought maybe now was a good time. I opened up to where my friend had put a bookmark for me. The first words of the poem were the title, Who Am I? Let's hear what Bonhoeffer says. Who am I? They often tell me I would step from my cell's confinement calmly, cheerfully, firmly, like a squire from his country house. Who am I? They often tell me I would talk to my warders freely and friendly and clearly as though it were mine to command. Who am I? They also tell me I would bear the days of misfortune equably, smilingly, proudly, like one accustomed to win. Am I then really all that which other men tell of? Or am I only what I know of myself, restless and longing and sick like a bird in a cage, struggling for breath as though hands were compressing my throat, yearning for colours, for flowers, for the voices of birds, thirsting for words of kindness, for neighbourliness, trembling with anger at despotisms and petty humiliation, tossing in expectation of great events, powerlessly trembling for friends at an infinite distance, weary and empty at praying, at thinking, at making, faint and ready to say farewell to it all. Who am I? This or the other? Am I one person today and tomorrow another? Am I both at once? A hypocrite before others and before myself, a contemptibly woebegone weakling? Or is something within me still like a beaten army, fleeing in disorder from victory already achieved? Who am I? They mock me, these lonely questions of mine. Whoever I am, thou knowest, O God, I am thine. Well, that's all we've got time for today. Thanks very much for joining me for this first audio installment of The Consolations of Writing. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have a story or a comment that you want to share, drop by The Consolations of Writing website, that's mpuller.com, and share your thoughts. Do tell others about the program or the site if you think they'll benefit from it, and be sure to stop by next time. Bye for now.